It has been an absolutely amazing couple weeks of ministry around here at Christ Church. God has been so, so good. It has just been great last week, an incredible time of worship on Easter, the whole week before that, the revival week. We were able to serve, get this, over the last week and a half, over 12,000 people came to Christ Church. Isn't that awesome? And what makes that so much more incredible is how many decisions have come, how many baptisms has happened because of what God is doing in this place. And so, man, it has been incredible. And if you missed last week, if you missed the revival, then I encourage you to go online and listen or watch online, because there's some great stuff that happened that week. But today, here we are, we're back together, we're back in the story. And if you're just joining us, maybe for the first time, or maybe last week was your first time, we've been going through this book right here called The Story, and it's really the Bible, kind of some stuff cut out of it a little bit. It's all in chronological order, so we can better understand what God is doing. And this week, we get into one of my favorite guys in the entire Bible. His name is David. And the reason I love David is because David is a warrior, he is a leader, he is an artist. He has this incredible, unique mix of gifts and talents. But if I'm being really honest with you today, the reason I like studying David is because he's worse than me. That's right. All right, David is a bad dude. We'll talk about that next week when he just commits two just awful sins with murder and adultery. And so next week we're going to jump into that and we're going to deal with that stuff. But here's the good news, all right? Listen to what God has said about David. And this is his words in Acts 13. He said, "I have found David, son of Jesse, a man after my own heart." I mean, there is hope for all of us then, right? I mean, if God can say that about David, then there's hope for all of us. And so kind of the background of where we are today, okay? Remember, Israel wanted a king. Israel wanted a king, and so the people are like, we don't want a heavenly king, we want an earthly king. We want to be like everybody else. And so God said, okay, you want a king? I'll give you a king. And he gave them Saul. Tall, dark, and handsome Saul, all right? And as we studied Saul, we saw pretty quickly that, yeah, this is a guy who in the beginning, he's going to do some good things. But ultimately, he's a guy who's going to hit decline time and time again. When God invites him to join him in ministry, we learned that week, when you decline God, you decline. And so that's where we pick up. Saul has blown it. God comes around and he says, you know what? It's time for us to choose a new king. So if you have your storybooks, we're going to turn to chapter number 11 and pick up the story of David. Here's what it says in the middle of the first paragraph. "Fill your horn," this is Samuel, God talking to Samuel, "fill your horn with oil and be on your way. I am sending you to Jesse of Bethlehem. I have chosen one of his sons to be king." So what's going on here? It's anointing time, all right? I mean Samuel went to Jesse because Saul had blown it, and it's time for God to pick a new king. Now, here's the cool part of the story that sometimes we overlook. Where did he go? To Bethlehem. Now, I just want you to see this, because this is so important. A lot of people think this Bethlehem is just some little place, and maybe we heard about in the Christmas story, because Mary and Joseph go there because they're from the house and lineage of who? David. And David is there in Bethlehem because he's out of the house and lineage of Boaz and Ruth. And so as we read through this story, as we go through the Bible, we see that Bethlehem is not some random place, that God is orchestrating something pretty incredible and supernatural through the town of Bethlehem. Now maybe you've kind of picked up in the first book of the New Testament in Matthew, and may say, "I want to read the New Testament, I want to read the account of Jesus." And so you picked up the book of Matthew and you started reading Matthew chapter 1. And you get a little way through it and you go, This is boring. It's just a bunch of names. And it does. Listen how it starts. It starts a record of the genealogy of Jesus Christ, the son of David, the son of Abraham, Abraham the father of Isaac, Isaac the father of Jacob, Jacob the father of Judah, Judah the father of Perez, Perez the father of Hezron, Hezron the father of Ram. This is boring stuff. I mean, that's what you're thinking. Ram the father of Abinadab. I love that name. I mean, I think I should just make everybody laugh every time. Abinadab. You know, that's just a fun name to name your kid that and see when you can yell that. Abinadab, get over here, you know. But Abinadab, the father of Nashon. Nashon, the father of Salmon. It's not Salmon. Salmon, the father of Boaz. Hold on, I know that name. Wasn't that the Redeemer dude? Yep. And we go on. Whose mother was Rahab. I know her. I mean, that's the lady who was the prostitute. Wasn't she the one who helped the spies in the city? Yeah, that's who she was. Boaz, the father of Obed, whose mother was Ruth. I know that name too. Obed, the father of Jesse, and Jesse, the father of King David. And all of a sudden, it's like, this isn't so boring after all. That God is doing something incredible here. And that God is moving through this little town. And Bethlehem's not some little podunk place. It doesn't matter. It's not an arbitrary place. God is doing something incredible in Bethlehem. So we pick up our story. We pick up as we continue to go through. The third paragraph down says this. When they arrived, Samuel saw Eliab, the oldest son, Eliab, and thought, surely the Lord's anointed stands here before the Lord. He must have been a good-looking kid. Because we all know the oldest has got the most potential, right? The oldest is the most important. Am I the only oldest child in the room? Come on, people, you know? And so they continue in the story. But the Lord said to Samuel, do not consider his appearance or his height, for I have rejected him. The Lord does not look at the things people look at. People look at the outward appearance, but the Lord looks at the heart. It's always about the heart. The heart, that's what God looks at. So Jesse, he had seven sons. He had his seven sons pass before Samuel. But Samuel said to him, the Lord has not chosen these. So he asked Jesse, are these all the sons you have? In other words, you got any more? All right? And here's the deal. I don't know why. I don't know why Jesse didn't bring David, but evidently he forgets one of his kids. And if you have eight boys, I guess I can see how that could happen, right? And you know, I have boys at home, and maybe if you have boys, you know how crazy it can get. In fact, someone sent me a couple pictures this week of why boys need mothers. All right, check out a couple of these pictures, and and all the dads are going, cool, you know, and moms are going, oh, no, welcome to Florida, you know, here we go. And I love this one. I mean, that should be on the wall of every kid's boys' room. I love that, just the freedom of diving into the thing of the night, and then that's great. And so some reason, some way, somehow, Jesse leaves out David. And so he lines up all his boys, he dresses them up, and here comes Samuel. He's passing by, and he's like, none of these are going to get the job done. And so Samuel goes, is there anybody else? Well, we don't know, all right, why Jesse left out David. But here's what we can kind of gather there. I guess Jesse didn't see a ton of potential in young David. He didn't see a lot of potential in David. And once again, Jesse was looking at the outside as God looks at the inside. And about this age, David probably was 14 or 15 years old. And so 14 or 15 years old, here he is. And here's the thing about David, all right? Even as a young man, he had a heart for God, but he didn't know what to do with his heart. He didn't know how to serve God. And so young people in this room, let me just encourage you, all right? Don't worry about how young you are, okay? If God has put something on your heart, do it for him. Do it for him. You know, there's this great testimony that we found as we were going through some of the stuff of the story. So watch this quick testimony about a young man who just did something for God.
Hi, I'm Evan Osterberg, and this is my story. Pretty much, I'd been wanting to do a Bible study, but I'd never really been able to find kind of the group to be able to do it. And then with this new neighborhood ministry, it kind of posed a good opportunity. One Sunday, I was talking to Mr. Ownby. They're leading a neighborhood group now. And so he asked me to do a child's group upstairs. I was just really excited to be able to do that because I've been wanting to do it for a while. Now we are doing it. We get up there and we have some really good conversations. And then from there on, we've gotten closer as a group and we've been able to go into more detail about it and be able to discuss things about our lives. And we've really come together as a group of friends that can go over the Bible together. So it's been really great. So it's normally just me and about four other kids. We would just go over the lesson plans that the adults go over. And I mean, it's just the same thing that we do. We have the same discussions, we have the same questions, except it's just kids. It's their perspective on what the Bible is really about and through what the church is talking about. And there's other times where it's kind of easy and laid back. I'd like to say that it has become a great thing. The first meeting was about how we can trust God. That was something that I really like to talk about because I like to put my faith in Him all the time and I just kind of lean back on Him. We got into discussions about why we can trust God and why we can trust the Bible, Jesus and what His life was like, the crucifixion and how that all took place. It was just a really good conversation. To see the kids know that much about the Bible at this age is really an interesting thing. It really warms my heart.
Isn't that awesome? Yeah. So young people in this room, young people, man, just because you're young, don't let it stop you from doing what God wants you to do. And all of us old people in this room, this is why our children's and youth ministry are so important, because these kids have got to get it in the world we live in today. Now, I tell you what, Jesse didn't see what God saw in David, and I don't think Samuel necessarily saw what God saw in David, but the story continues. Then the Lord said, "Rise," talking to Samuel, "and anoint him. This is the one." So Samuel took the horn of oil and anointed him in the presence of his brothers. In other words, this is the one I want. I want the 14-year-old. Give me the kid. And you know, this week I had to think about this. I had to pause and ask this question. I mean, what is it that gave David a heart for God? I mean, I think we need to pause and ask that question, because if there's anything I'd love to have on my tombstone, it'd be he was a man after God's own heart. And so what is it? What was it that gave David this kind of heart? And I thought about a couple things. The first thing I thought of was this: solitude. Solitude. David was a shepherd. It was just him and sheep. There was no laptop, there was no cell phone, no iPad or iPod. It was just he and God. Now before you go, you know what, Jason? I know I'm too busy. I just need to sell all my stuff and move to the country and find me a wife and get me a fiddle where the sun comes up and there are cakes on the griddle. Thank God I'm a country. All right. Yeah, before you do that, and let me just make this disclaimer. You or I, we probably wouldn't be very good country boys, all right? I mean, we like our indoor plumbing and Comcast, right? So here's the deal. You know, the reality is we are suburbanites. That's right, we're suburbanites, because here is our problem. Check out this picture. Yeah. Clark W. Griswold, eat your heart out. I mean, this is our problem. We are just too busy, too plugged in. And what happens when we're living like this is we can never get peace and quiet. We can never get time alone with God. I mean, sometimes we just need to schedule some solitude, some one-on-one time with God. I mean, I love the book. It's called Death by the Suburbs, and written by a guy by the name of David Getz. And listen to what he says. He says, it's not about becoming a monk. It's a little stuff. Without a line item for quietness, the days get used up, carpooling, working on another degree, making partner in the firm, planning yet another birthday party. One wakes up some morning and finds the years have slipped by. Perhaps many dreams have been fulfilled, a move to a larger house, the vice president, to a condo after the kids have moved out. But the soul has become like a boarded up discount store in an empty parking lot with weeds rising up out of the cracks in the pavement. Man, if this is where your soul is today, then maybe you need to schedule a little one-on-one time with God. You know, the reason David was able to write Psalms is because he had a lot of one-on-one time with God. And so if you find yourself in a place where you just feel wore out and tired, maybe solitude is what you need. And here's the second thing I think we see from David about having a heart from God, and it's this: faithfulness. It's faithfulness. I mean, do you think David actually liked being a shepherd? I mean, do you know what being a shepherd is all about? Do you know about sheep? I mean, have you ever seen trained sheep in the circus? No. You want to know why? Because they're stupid as snot. That's why, all right? I mean, these are the dumbest animals on the planet, which makes me think, when Jesus says, I am the good shepherd, was he digging on us? I don't know. I'm just wondering, all right? Yeah, this week I found a story about shepherds in Turkey. It's a true story. You can go find it online. Some shepherds were out watching over their sheep, and one of the sheep during breakfast decided that he was going to run and jump off the cliff. And before these guys could stop the rest of the sheep, 1,500 other sheep followed the one. 450 of them died. Now, you're probably doing the math like I did. How come not all of them died? There was 1,000 that made it, Jason. Well, those 1,000 landed on a big pile of white, fluffy, dead sheep. That's why they didn't die, all right? Sheep are just stupid. So if you think David loved his job, you're probably wrong. And maybe that's where you're at right now. Maybe you got one of those jobs, you're going, man, Jason, this job is just stupid. Or maybe you're going, you know, I'm just a stay-at-home mom, or I'm just a stay-at-home dad. I mean, it's boring, it's monotonous. I want you to hear what Jesus said. Jesus said these words, if you are faithful in the little things, you will be faithful in the large ones. And David was faithful as a shepherd, and God made him faithful as a king. You see, that is the way it works. When you are faithful in the little things and things are taken care of and you have a heart for God, God gives you something bigger to take care of. So what's the third thing, Jason? Here's the third thing I think we can learn from David. The reason I think David had a heart for God is because of difficulty. Because of difficulty. I mean, we're going to find out about being a shepherd that, yeah, it might have been boring, but it wasn't always easy. David was attacked by a lion one time. He was attacked by a bear one time. And we're going to see a little bit later in the story that maybe the reason David didn't show up to the whole anointing ceremony is because he and his brothers really didn't get along. I mean, we're going to see a little bit later in the story that his brothers really kind of picked on him a little bit. And in fact, I mean, I don't know about you, but I mean, these words I heard from Bible teacher Beth Moore, listen to what she says. I believe David's wisdom and meditative nature got their start in the loneliness of a little brother accustomed to being put down and ostracized. Did he inherit the duties of keeping sheep, or were the woolly creatures preferable to the company of taunting brothers? Have you ever felt like the youngest son, the consummate little brother? You don't have to be male and you don't have to have siblings to feel that way. In fact, I don't think anyone escapes the feeling completely. Sometime, somewhere, you've probably been treated as if you didn't exist, weren't wanted, and didn't matter. Man, I think that's where David was. So you know what? There are going to be difficulties in life. And some of you are thinking, Jason, so what you're telling me right now is if I want a heart like David's, if I want a heart for God, it's not going to be that fun? Yeah, that's exactly what I'm telling you right now. David wasn't born that way. There wasn't some magic little instant, you know, heart for God type of pill that you can take. It takes time. David had to grow that way. And I don't think you need to put yourself in difficult situations or boring or monotonous situations to try to develop that kind of heart. I'm telling you, those situations are going to come. Problems and difficulties and loneliness and boredom, they're going to come. And when they do come, let those things push you towards God. You see, one of two things is going to happen. When those things come, it'll either push you towards God or away from God. You'll either become bitter or you'll become blessed when difficulties come your way. And so if you want a heart for God, you want a heart like David's, then you need to have these three things. You need to have solitude, you need to have faithfulness and difficulty. And let those things push you towards God time and time and time again. And then there's always the test. That's right, there's a test. There's always a test when it comes to having a heart for God. There's a test. In David's test, it comes pretty early in his life. Now, again, we don't know how old David is, but we do know he is too old to go to war, to be in the army. And so as our story picks up, we find out that David has gone to the front lines to bring some food, to maybe bring some lunch to his older brothers. And so let's pick up here in the middle of page 146. It says this, now the Philistines gathered their forces for war. The Philistines occupied one hill and the Israelites another, with the valley between them. And a champion named Goliath, who was from Gath, came out of the Philistine camp. His height was 6 cubits and a span. He had a bronze helmet on his head and wore a coat of scale armor of bronze weighing 5,000 shekels. Now, let me just give you a little perspective here, all right? I am an average size guy. I used to be about 5'11 and 3/4. I've shrunk about a half an inch. I'm gonna be an Oompa Loompa in a couple years, I guess, but you know, I'm an average size guy. And David would have been about my size, probably no taller than me. And then here is Goliath. And I know what some of you are thinking right now. You know what, Jason, this is one of those Jack in the Beanstalk kind of stories. No, it wasn't. And here's how I can prove it to you. There was a guy in the 1940s who lived in Alton, Illinois. He was 8'11", weighed over 500 pounds. In fact, I think we got a couple pictures of him. This is his graduation picture from high school. All right, check out this picture with his mom. He's sitting down, she's standing up. All right, this guy was big. And so here we have Goliath. And that's why we call things Goliath now, because this guy was 9'6" tall. And he wore over 200 pounds of armor. All right? So get this. I mean, like, there's Shaq. All right? And then there's Goliath. And so this is the guy who every day during the middle of the battle would come out and start talking trash to the Israelites. So let's pick up our story in the middle of page 147. Goliath stood and shouted to the ranks of Israel, "Why do you come out and line up for battle? Am I not a Philistine? Are you not servants of Saul? Choose a man and have him come down to me. If he's able to fight and kill me, we will become your subjects. But if I overcome him and kill him, you will become our subjects and serve us." Then the Philistine said, "This day I defy the armies of Israel. Give me a man and let us fight each other." I mean, this isn't some Red Rover send someone right over type of thing here, all right? I mean, this is a battle between two armies. This is two nations. This is two gods. And this is what it's all going to be about. And so it says, for 40 days, the Philistine came forward every morning and evening and took a stand. I mean, I can just imagine these guys, the Israelites, coming out of their tents, coming out to see if he's going to come out. He comes out and he's like, "Oh, there he is again. You know, I wish you'd just stay away one day, you know?" But let me ask you this question, though. I mean, do you have any giants in your life today? You know, maybe right now you're going, "I don't have one." You know what? Good for you if you don't right now. But maybe some of you, as soon as I said that, you knew you had a giant. You knew you had a giant, and more than likely, you've been looking at that giant for some time. Maybe 40 days and 40 nights, maybe all day and all night. It just seems like forever, and I don't know what the giant is. Maybe it's not a problem. Maybe it's a person. Maybe it's a relationship. Maybe it's an opportunity. And you have just been looking at this giant for 40 days and 40 nights and just wondering if you can ever get past this giant. Well, as we continue, here's what happens. It says this. It says that on hearing the Philistine's words, Saul and all the Israelites were dismayed and terrified. You can underline those words if you want, dismayed and terrified. And maybe some of you here today, maybe you've been going through some hard financial times. Maybe the economy or being out of work is just really just hurt. Or maybe your family's just been in a lot of trouble. Maybe your family's just been busted up. And those words, dismayed and terrified, man, they've been on the front of your mind for a long time. But listen, they don't have to be. They don't have to be. Our God is bigger than any giant that you are going to face. And that's what we're going to see as the story continues. And so we continue in our story. And it says this. It says that David ran to the battle lines and he asked his brothers how they were. As they were talking with him, Goliath, the Philistine champion from Gath, stepped out from his lines and shouted his usual defiance, and David heard it. Whenever the Israelites saw the man, they all fled from him in great fear. And I just love that because I just pictured like a cartoon or maybe the Little Rascals when Goliath comes out and everybody just takes off running real in high speed, running back to their tents. Because I think what they're thinking is every time they come out, they're just praying, "Oh man, we hope he has a heart attack. We hope he chokes on a chicken bone. I mean, would he trip and fall on his sword because we don't want to see him again?" I think that's what they're thinking here. And so as we continue this story here, here's what it says. David asked the men standing near him, "Who is this uncircumcised Philistine that should defy the armies of the living God?" Can you imagine that? A 14-year-old boy saying that. But that's David. That's what kind of heart he has. And so as we continue to go through this story, what I want to do is I want to point out just a couple ways that you and I can overcome some of the giants in our lives, some of the giants we face. And the very first lesson is simply this: when you meet a giant, people will discourage you. People will discourage you. And listen to what happens, all right? It says this: when Eliab, David's oldest brother, heard him speaking with the men, he burned with anger at him and asked, "Why have you come down here? And with whom did you leave those few sheep in the wilderness? I know how conceited you are and how wicked your heart is. You came down only to watch the battle." I mean, does that sound like an older brother there or what? And I love the contrast here between Eliab and David. Because here's the deal. You have Eliab, who's the oldest brother. He is stronger. He should be the one going out to fight Goliath. But every morning, every night, he comes running back to his tent saying, "I want my mommy. I want my mommy." He's afraid of Goliath. And here comes David. He shows up. He's there 5 minutes and he says, "I'll fight him." And so you got to imagine how embarrassed Eliab must have been when this little pipsqueak brother of his shows up and says, "I'll fight Goliath." I mean, this is the same little pipsqueak brother who one day Samuel came and anointed as the future king of Israel. And so you've got to know that just burned Eliab. And so I love this contrast here. I mean, you have Eliab who's a big guy but has a small heart. And we're never going to hear another word about him in the rest of the Bible. But we have David, this little guy with a huge heart. And there are 62 books in the Bible about David. Isn't that awesome? It's incredible. So there are always going to be people who discourage you. And the people who discourage you usually are the people who are too chicken to do it themselves. That's right. Too chicken to do it themselves. There are always going to be people who say, "You can't do it." I mean, don't go on the mission field. Don't go on a mission trip. You might get sick. I mean, don't teach the kids. Only a small group on the weekends. Keep your weekends free. Don't give any money to the church. Save it for a rainy day. I mean, don't adopt a child. It'll just mess up your family dynamics. Don't lead a neighborhood group or host a neighborhood group. They're just going to mess up your house. Those are the kind of people who always are going to come around. They are people who are going to discourage you. What kind of people are they? They're chickens because they're too afraid to do it themselves. And so as we pick up the story, that's what's going on. No one thought that David could do this. His brothers didn't think it. Saul didn't think he can do it either. So listen to what David said to Saul. David said to Saul, "Let no one lose heart on account of this Philistine. Your servant will go and fight him." Saul replied, "You are not able to go out against this Philistine and fight him. You're only a young man. He has been a warrior from his youth." Saul's going, "Are you kidding me? Are you joking with me?" But here's the difference, you see. What Saul saw, he saw a big guy and a big problem. You know what David saw? David saw a big guy and an even bigger target. That's what David saw. Which leads me to the second thing that we need to discuss today. The second lesson is simply this: when you meet a giant, don't forget what God did for you the last time. When you meet a giant, don't forget what God did for you the last time. And here's what it says. We continue at the bottom of page 148. But David said to Saul, "Your servant has been keeping his father's sheep. When a lion or bear came and carried off a sheep from the flock, I went after it, struck it, and rescued the sheep from its mouth. When it turned on me, I seized it by its hair, struck it, and killed it. Your servant has killed both the lion and the bear. This uncircumcised Philistine will be like one of them, because he has defied the armies of the living God. The Lord who rescued me from the paw of the lion and the paw of the bear will rescue me from the hand of this Philistine." You see what David figured out right there? He figured out that the battle is not ours. The battle is not ours to win. That's not about our abilities. It's about the ability of God. And listen, David doesn't start off in this story fighting giants. All right? He starts off with something smaller, bears and lions. All right? I mean, can you imagine that's smaller? But that's how God works. The moment you're no longer afraid, the moment David was no longer afraid of bears and lions, he gives him a giant. And here's the deal. He knows that if God was with him then, he's going to be with him now. And so he's going to be able to take this giant. And so maybe you, I mean, I don't know what you've been facing. I don't know what problem it is. And I don't know if it's a difficulty. I don't know if it's a giant. I don't know if it's a lion or a bear. But when those things come, remember Well, God did the last time. Remember how God led you through the fight? And maybe for you, it's not a big wild animal. Maybe it's like a squirrel, all right? Or a raccoon, or a killer rabbit with fangs like this, you know? Maybe it's just a crazy small animal for you. But here's the deal. The next time you face a fight, the next time you face a giant, remember that God was with you last time. And so he's going to be with you now. I mean, I think that's why David was able to write these incredible words from Psalm 23. Though I walk through the valley of shadow of death, I will fear no evil. David was confident in his God. Kind of like this cat. See this cat? I mean, he is confident in who he is, walking in front of all these police dogs, all right? And today, as we go through this, man, here's what I want you to know, that when you face a giant, remember the bear. Remember that God was with you the last time. And so that's what I love about David as we continue through this story. And so it goes on, top of page 149, Saul said to David, go, the Lord be with you. I mean, Saul's still thinking in human terms, and Saul dressed David in his own tunic. He put a coat of armor on him and a bronze helmet on his head. David fastened on his sword over the tunic and tried walking around because he was not used to them. Now, the picture I get here is like your kid wearing your suit and your shoes, all right? You picture that in your mind, just a little kid wearing an oversized suit and oversized shoes and trying to walk around. I think that's what's going on here. And David says, I cannot go in these, he said to Saul, because I'm not used to them. So he took them off. He took his staff in his hand, chose 5 smooth stones from the stream, put them in the pouch of his shepherd's bag, and with his sling in his hand, approached the Philistine. Which I think brings us to lesson number 3, and it's simply this, all right? When you meet a giant, use your own battle gear. When you meet a giant, use your own battle gear. I mean, don't fight like somebody else. Don't fight like someone you wish you were. I mean, God has given you strength. He's given you abilities. He's given you things that you can do, so fight like you. I mean, who was David? What was David good at? Was David good at using a sword? No. When would he ever done that? David was a shepherd. David spent most of his days out hunting and protecting his sheep, and what he would have used this incredible little thing called a slingshot. It would have been a long strip of leather with a little pocket in it, and they would have slung stones. And David would have been so good that he could hit a target 100 yards away. Now understand, when he says stones, don't picture David as a little boy with this little slingshot picking up these little pebbles. I mean, the stones they would have shot would have been as big as baseballs. All right, and when this sling gets going, it can launch a stone at over 100 miles an hour. So just imagine getting hit with a stone the size of a baseball going 100 miles an hour. It's not going to be a good day, all right? And so here's David, and a lot of people think David would sit out just strumming his harp, writing poetry every day. But it's not what he did. He would be out practicing his craft. And so when Goliath came and put on all this armor to go to fight, David didn't go, I got to put on my armor to go fight him. David said, no, I'm confident in who I am. I'm confident in what God has given me, and I'm going to trust my own strengths, and I'm going to go to battle that way. And which leads us to our last lesson here. And our last lesson is simply this. When you meet a giant, don't be intimidated. Don't be intimidated when you meet a giant. Well, let's pick up here as we continue the story. Meanwhile, the Philistine with his shield bearer in front of him kept coming closer to David. He looked David over and saw that he was little more than a boy, glowing with health and handsome. I love that. And he despised him. He said to David, am I a dog that you come at me with sticks? And the Philistine cursed David by his gods. Come here, he said, and I will give your flesh to the birds and the wild animals. And I love this. Because David is not intimidated. And you just got to picture this. Here you got this 9'6" tall Goliath. I mean, this warrior. And every day he comes out and he stands out there in the field and says, come fight me. And over here on this side, you've got the Philistine army. And over here, you got the Israelite army. And so they send out David. And Goliath goes, are you kidding me? And all the Philistines are going, he's going to die. He's going to die. And then you got all the Israelites over here going, he's going to die. He's going to die. And David's not listening to them. He's not listening to them. He's not listening to anybody. Which leads me to a great leadership lesson for all of us today. We can tweet this. We can Facebook this. This is important. Simply says this, a leader who keeps his ear to the ground too much allows his rear to become an easy target. All right? David wasn't listening to his critics. You shouldn't listen to your critics, to people who say you can't do it, because you can. And so what does David do? You know what David does? David runs. He charges the giant. Man, I love this story. Listen to what it says. Here it says, as the Philistine moved closer to attack him, David ran quickly toward the battle line to meet him. Wow. And you know, this week I was thinking about Ephesians 6. Ephesians 6, where Paul talks about we had this armor of God, that we had this helmet of salvation, the breastplate of righteousness, the belt of truth, we had the shoes of the gospel, a shield of faith, sword of spirit. But nowhere in there does it have any protection for the buttocks region, all right? And the reason is, we should never be running away from a fight. We should run towards the fight, because God is bigger than any giant we're ever going to face. And so we continue. It says this, David said to the Philistine, you come against me with sword and spear and javelin, but I come against you, all right, in the name of the Lord Almighty. This day the Lord will deliver you into my hands. The whole world will know that there is a God in Israel. The world will know that David is awesome? No. The world will know that Israel is awesome? No. The world will know that there is a God in Israel. And so as it continues here, and it says, then Philistine moved closer to attack him. David ran quickly toward the battle line to meet him, reaching into his bag and taking out a stone. He slung it and struck the Philistine on the forehead. The only vulnerable spot on the entire giant. The only spot there wasn't any armor. I mean, it all came together. David went with his strengths, what he knew. He went with the confidence in his great big God, and it all came together, and he slayed the giant. And listen to what it says. David ran and stood over him. And I love this. I love this, because here's the truth. I mean, giants don't look so big when they're lying down, do they? They don't look so big when they're lying down. So David ran and stood over him. He took a hold of the Philistine's sword and drew it from the sheath, which I think right there is a little lesson. I mean, Goliath didn't even draw a sword. He was about to rip David apart with his bare hands. He didn't respect him. And so he drew his sheath after he killed him. He cut off his head with the sword. Yuck, I'm ready for lunch now. And when the Philistines saw their hero was dead, they turned and ran. They took off. The battle was over. The Philistines were defeated, and they ran away. Wow. I love this story, because there's so many lessons here. There's so much stuff we can take away. And here's the thing I think that we all simply need to take away here today. Because you see, at some point in your life, you're going to have to decide if you're going to be a big person with a little God, or if you're going to be a little person with a great big God. I mean, you're going to have to decide that. I mean, listen to the contrast here with Goliath. Goliath said, am I a dog that you come at me with sticks? And the Philistine cursed David by his gods. By his gods, his little g gods. He was a big person with a little g god. And what do you get when you have a big person with a little g god? All that's left is you. Is you. But David said, no, I'm a little g god. And I've got a really big g god. And I come in the name of the Lord, and I have a big G God that will take care of any giant that is in my path. I know some of you right now are going, Jason, that's great. Good for David. I mean, good for David. I'm glad he was able to slay his giant, but you don't get it. I mean, my giant is real. Well, you know what? I think there's some words that God would want to say to you today. Listen to a couple of these scriptures. 1 John 4:4, greater is he that is in me than he that is in the world. Zechariah 4:6, not by might nor by strength, but by my spirit, says the Lord. 1 John 5:4, this is the victory that overcomes the world, even our faith. Philippians 4:13, I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me. Those are for you. That's what God wants you to hear today, that the big G God lives in you. If you have Jesus Christ in your life, if you have that big G God in your life, then you have this incredible power at your fingertips, the power of God, the power of heaven, to overcome whatever giant you face in your life. Now, I just want you to hear the words that David used when he went to fight this giant one more time. Here's the full text. It says, David said to the Philistine, you come against me with sword and spear and javelin, but I come against you in the name of the Lord Almighty, the God of the armies of Israel, whom you have defied. This day the Lord will hand you over to me, and I will strike you down and cut off your head. Today I will give the carcass of the Philistine army to the birds of the air and the beasts of the earth, and the whole world will know that there is a God in Israel. all those gathered here will know that it's not by sword or spear that the Lord saves, for the battle is the Lord's, and he will give all of you into our hands. Six times, just in case you weren't counting, six times he says, the battle belongs to the Lord. He says, it's not my problem. It's not my problem. I'm just a little G guy with a big G God, and he can handle whatever comes my way. So it doesn't matter how big you see your giants as. Here's what you need to understand. Our God is bigger than any giant that you'll ever face in your life. And you know what this giant slayer wrote? Listen to what he wrote in the book of Psalms. The Lord is my light and my salvation. Whom shall I fear? The Lord is the stronghold of my life, and whom shall I be afraid? When evil men advanced against me to devour my flesh, when my enemies and my foes attack me, they will stumble and fall. And boy, did they. Why? Because he was a little G guy with a big G God. Dwight Moody once said these words. He said, the world is yet to see what God can do through one person who is totally devoted to him. Now, I don't know. I think we might have saw that person in young David. I think we might have saw that in young David. And I know what he was trying to say there. He's trying to say the same thing that an Old Testament writer said. He said, for the eyes of the Lord range throughout the earth to strengthen those whose hearts are fully committed to him. See, if your heart is for God, he's not waiting for you. He's not waiting for you. He is searching for you. He is looking for you. And he is looking for one little window of faith, one little window in your heart where he can use your life. He can say, hey, trust me. I will help you overcome your giant. I will help you overcome your fears. Yeah, the enemy might come at you with sword and spear and javelin, but you come in the name of the Lord Almighty. He can overcome your giants. That's what he wants to do. That's what he wants to do in your life. Listen to these words of Paul. Paul said, what then shall we say in response to all this? If God is for us, who can be against us? No, in all these things, we are more than conquerors through him who loves us. We are more than conquerors through him who loves us.